This is Surviving the Music Industry.
That sounds sick.
I didn't think about how that sounded.
All right, hey folks, this is Brandon chiming in your earpiece right now that this is SMI Podcast. This is my podcast where I get to have pretty rad conversations with musicians, artists, songwriters, people of industry. Blah, I hate the way that sounds. And just all around creative folks around music. And we have pretty rad conversations about their life. And then I'm surviving the music industry, which I tend to not do very well. And that makes a lot of people laugh. For some reason, stop laughing. Keep me out of your jokes. What do you think I am? Your clown and your circus? Get me out of here. When's the last time that a clown did something great for you? Talk to John Wayne Gacy. That dude was messed up. That was a really bad joke by any means, but I don't know. I've been on a serial killer kick. For some reason, Halloween is over. Maybe because it's an election year and we still don't know who a president is. And I'm just waiting for something just to blow up. I don't know. I don't know where any of this is going. But I'm glad that you folks are here along the journey in my headspace of surviving the music industry. Give us a follow at SMI Podcast, Facebook, Twitter, at Unofficial Brandon, Instagram, TikTok. Of course, we got smipodcast.com. But no doubt you're listening to this. One, either you like this, you like me, you get to learn something, at least from my life, or you already like Carl Michael's music. You know who this guy is. I have to say that I didn't know who this guy was. And my life is thoroughly enlightened a lot more after getting to know this guy and learning something about his music. It's fun when you take a risk on things. And I'll fully admit, like, there's something about me in my headspace when, like, people ask me if they, like, mostly like a publicist, like, hey, can somebody do the thing on your thing? Well, I mean, what are they going to say? Like, what's going to be the interesting thing? And then, like, am I invested? And, you know, like, what is that thing that's going to make me curious about the person? Because, you know, this is all talk. This is when, like, the music's not playing. So you at least got to say something. And it's harder than what you think, folks, because we're musicians. That's why most artists have radio answers. They're ready to go. Most people just can't sit around and just shoot the shit and, like, stay on topic of that shit. So it's a kind of a hard art form, like, to keep it going for about an hour or so. And after diving into Carl's music and learning about it, I'm just glad I took that chance. And I have to say, this is a typical pattern in my life. I don't take chances. I don't take chances, which is weird because I took a chance in my music career all across the board because it's all chances, right? And because it's not like we crave security. If we crave security, we would just work at a grocery store and just be that brown bag special sacker. Or whatever. Do people still do that? That's a Kroger thing. That is a Kroger thing. But for some reason, we chose to do risk. We chose to risk it all because we enjoy something. We enjoy either skinny jeans, or we enjoy the free stuff that we get, but we live in squalor. I don't know. This hope that there's all this gold on the other end of the rainbow. That's my case. It took me a long time to learn that. There's nothing at the end of that shitstorm of a rainbow. But it's interesting that we take these risks, but then we don't take risks on people enough. I'm learning this even in my own career that I'm dealing with something even right now. Like, they don't want to take a risk on me because of a following. I have people listen to this thing. I have thousands of people, like, listen to this thing every week. But my social numbers, I mean, that's why you guys been hearing me, like, harp on social, spitting that shit out. But I don't know. It's such a rare thing. People just don't take risk anymore. What happens if we just start taking the risk? We just take it. We touch it. We taste it. We poke it. And, like, we take that risk out for a ride for a week or two, maybe a month or two, maybe 3 months, 4 months. We're going to tell that risk that, hey, let's try it out. Let's just see what you can do. And if it does well, everybody's making money. Everybody seems to be happy. You're not making each other's lives miserable. What's wrong with that? take more risk. I feel like we're in a day and a space and a time where risk is a kind of a forgotten art, and we're always wanting security and something locked in. It'd be great if something was locked in, but you know what wasn't locked in? 2020. Who knew Black Plague Part 2 was even going to happen? But it's amazing once you do take that risk with your fellow human. Humans have the amazing capability to shock and awe you every single time. And it's worth to take that risk, no matter what it is, I guess. But just try it. Just taste it. Don't lick them. That's pretty fucking awkward. But, I mean, just try it. Just try it. What's wrong with that? Where's the risk of just trying it? The good thing is that you can always backpedal. There's no reset button. Whatever's done is done. But just to try. I don't know, just going back and listening to this conversation with Carl. I didn't know the guy before, but I'm so happy to know the guy now just through this thing. I mean, we got more than 6 feet and a phone line between us and a satellite. But I think, I don't know, I just learned something more about the human condition and spirit. Some people will remember Carl from The Voice. I know I have UK listeners. You'll remember him from The Voice. You'll remember him with other songs because he's had recording deals. He's had publishing deals. He's done the thing. The dude's been around the block, all right? But for some reason, and that's been the biggest question mark before leading up to this conversation of what happened. Everything seemed to be going so good. The guy was getting tossed $500,000 recording deals. And the voice on this dude is amazing. I didn't have to tell him that, but I very rarely toss out compliments to anybody, but the dude's voice is phenomenal. So what's the story? What's the deal? We get down to it. Carl was gracious enough to give us a call and tell us about what's been going on in his life. He's the newest resident in Nashville. He's living on this side, the good side, the clean side of sobriety. So we talked through that, how he's dealing with that, and any good tips for anybody wrestling, because we're getting closer to the holidays. I feel like this is the worst time. I'm not much of a holiday person myself. I kind of have anxiety and everything myself. So it seems like people tend to kind of forget that because they start thinking about all of the bubbly stuff that happens. But there's a lot of like flat, not so bubbly things that happen. And I'm glad we got into it. We got into a mental health space and talk about sobriety, but of course we talked about his music, everything that's coming out, all that to say, everything seems to be going really well. He's been releasing music, he's been trickling it here and there. I think it started with Tunnel Vision, it went to a music video, Beautiful Creature, I feel like really popped for a lot of people around town, and then now it's Wait a Minute, it's been out since close to the end of October, I feel like, And he's still riding that train, and he's still going to be releasing stuff that we learned from this conversation. So it's all geared up to something much bigger, a much bigger plan. And honestly, what's most important is that I talk to a human being that makes great art, and he's living a healthy life. And that's really enough said, and I appreciate it. Go give him a follow at It's Carl with a K. Remember that, folks. It's Carl Michael. And that's it. We got stuff at our website, too. Go stream all his new music. Go listen to it on your favorite listening platform and go watch those videos. But nonetheless, here we go. Here's Carl.
I was on the phone to my family that's FaceTime about a couple of hours ago. It's like late over there.
Oh, sure.
And they're all like making dinner and stuff. And I said to my mom, I was like, can you believe that I live in America now and, you know, I'm releasing music? She's like I always knew you'd do it kind of thing. Like, ever since I was a kid, I was like, I want to live in America. Now I'm here. I live here.
Good crazy. For you, man.
I've got an American car. Mad. I just need an American lady.
Are you? Are you dating somebody? You're going to get that green card?
Nah. Do you know what? I wouldn't marry someone to live somewhere. I think that's... No, I'll get my green card my own way. You know what I mean? I sell enough records to get one.
It's one way to do it. In some ways, it's cheaper. So, I mean, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, the visa that I'm on now wasn't cheap. So. So I can't imagine how expensive the green card is.
I know. Visas are not a fucking cheap thing. I lived in Southeast Asia. And I mean, it wasn't cheap then. Yeah. I mean, coming to fucking America, like, it's so hard to get in. It's easy to get out coming in.
Oh, man. Yeah. Coming in. Oh, my God. I've been banned from America when I was 16. Actually, when I signed to Atlantic, it was the only way I could get back into America. I'd have to hire a lawyer. Then we had to go in and be interviewed and stuff. And in the end, it was the illegal immigration officer's fault for how he treated me, and they ended up giving me a 10-year visa. And the visa, like, allowed me entry without question.
No shit.
And even though I had that, every time I went to LA or New York, especially New York, that's me. Why have you got this? Why did you get it? And I have to repeat the whole story again. It's like deja vu every time I go in an airport.
It's PTSD. I've been there. I understand. Yeah. But I love that America basically gave you a customer service voucher. Of like, hey, here you go.
Mm. Yeah, I was 16 and the dude put me in handcuffs and locked me in a room for 5 hours and then escorted me on the plane with 2 machine guns. I was 16, man. I was just out of school and fuck me, man. That stuck with me. Like, I remember the guy's face, his name, some shoe that I remember everything about him.
Wow, dude, that would mess you up. 16 years old, yeah. Man, that's a psychological, yeah, like, mind fuck. Wow, that's crazy. Yeah. You say you remember the guy's name?
Working 2 jobs. Yeah, John Fieber. Working 2 jobs. Wow. Before school and after school, everything, man. Like, window cleaning on the weekends, what everyone else stopped playing football or hanging out with a mate. I was just making that money to get out of there.
Wow. Wow, man, what a trip. Yeah, I know. You got the crazy journey, man, which is insane.
And it took me 18 years to get here.
18 years? Now, how long have you lived here?
Not even a year now. I've been here since Christmas.
Okay, you're still a new kid.
I had my first Christmas. Yeah, out of all of America I've been, I love Nashville. I'm in love with it. I love the people. I love the food. I love the songwriting sessions. I'm very, very, very fucking grateful, man.
Oh, good for you, man. Yeah. That's a great place to be this day and age.
Yeah, I'm really happy.
That's good, man. Have you got used to coffee and not tea as much?
Nope, still no. I have to get my tea bag shipped out. My publisher sends them or brings them when she comes out, and my mum or my sister sends me tea bags. It's weird. Like, tea is... it's a very social thing in England, but there's something incredibly relaxing about sitting with a mug of tea and just reflecting. Like, whenever you walk into someone's house in England, they'll be like, sit the kettle on instantly. Because before you start talking, you have the tea. You know what I mean? It have something in your hand while you're talking. I don't know. I love tea. I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah, I get it. I do. We don't have that thing. We don't have that in our culture. Iced tea. Iced tea's got to be a weird thing for you. Like,
oh, yeah. When I first came out here, that's what they kept bringing. I was like, I'll have a tea, please. And it would turn up in like a big glass.
Yeah.
I was like, no, a tea, English tea. Yeah. And then they wouldn't know. But, and I would be milk and sugar, and then they bring me half and half. I was like, no, it's got to be milk. I can't put cream in tea. Crazy.
Yeah. It's a different world. When I meet up with my UK buddies, I always have to like order for them, like in a coffee shop or something. Because it's a way different thing. You're an alien.
When I go to like Starbucks or if I'm in any place, I order with an American accent, because if I do it the first time, I guarantee they go, what? So I just
become amazing.
Like a... whenever we're in a restaurant anywhere, like they come to the table, I just instantly order it in like a South, Southern Nashville accent kind of thing. Oh, not a very good accent.
Can I please hear your accent? I got to hear it now.
Oh, okay. Hang on. Let me order some food.
Yeah.
Hey, can I get a latte and give me the corn hash? Well done, please.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
You've nailed it, man. I would have thought you're from Mississippi, Alabama, somewhere in there.
Alabama.
You just got to say Roll Tide, man. Now. Then you're in. You're in.
Yeah. Catfish Billy, man. But you know what? I do want to marry a girl from Alabama.
Oh, they're beautiful, man.
I want. Yeah, man. I'll get on to this place called Unclaimed Baggage, and you buy like a lot of clothes and stuff. And every time I'm down, I'm like looking for the wife.
Yeah, man, it's insane the amount of beautiful women in the South, especially like
Dude, it's like 8 to 1.
Oh, it's amazing! It's incredible. It's kind of like God just kind of forgot everywhere else in the world and just sprinkled them in Oxford, Mississippi. Have you ever been to Ole Miss?
Yeah. No, not yet. I've probably driven through it and stuff. My geography starts to get better out.
Yeah, it's okay. I thought you might would have played there like at a show or something when that was a thing. But
I haven't done any shows yet. And I've done like a listening room and stuff, but I have my first full band rehearsed tomorrow.
Oh, wow. Man, that's going to be a trip for you. That's fun.
My band is insane.
Oh, cool, man.
I got the best players, man. They are so good. They're incredible. All in their own right as well. They're all songwriters, all producers, and they're incredibly talented musicians. I'm very lucky.
I love it. Do you just have your just own crew of songwriters that you're kind of hanging out with since you moved here?
Not really. I kind of have two friend groups. So I have my friends who I make music with. Dallas is my best friend with that. But then I have my other friends that they know that I don't really talk about music. If I'm not doing it, I don't really talk about it. I'm not one of them people. I don't. You know, if I'm at a house party, I won't play one of my demos, or I won't sing a song. I don't really like stealing spotlight from anyone else.
Nobody wants to be that guy.
No, I've been a songwriter for long enough to know that sometimes that's quite detrimental when you're in a room full of songwriters. Be like, oh, look at me, because people call it demo jail. You're sitting and listening to people's demos, and it's like, I'm not that dude. So I have another set of friends here that I go fishing with, that I barbecue with, that we just hang out and we never talk about the music. They never talk about it.
That's human, man. I love that. I love that so much. Yeah. There's nothing worse to me than listening to somebody's demo that I'm not invested in. Like either I don't know them or I just not invested in it. But then also,
just don't care.
That is a piece of it. But then the most awkward thing for me is listening parties. Like, I just can't go to a listening party where a songwriter, artist, it doesn't matter who, they'll play the entire record and, like, we're just supposed to sit there and listen to the whole thing. Like, that, I just can't do that.
No.
Such a weird experience.
I'd rather be given the music and I listen to it at home in my own time. Like, maybe I light up a doobie or something, like, sit and digest the album, but I don't know. Don't get me wrong, I was when I was younger. Hell yeah, I would have been that dude. Like, play this. I think it's great. But now, as I've gotten older, I've realised that people don't care as much as you do. And when they do start caring, it means you're doing stuff.
Right. When you hit that level with that human being, where they invest in it, they love it, that's when you basically have a fan. You almost have a friend. Like, they're invested in you at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love that. But it sounds like life is going well for you.
It is, man. I'm really lucky. I count my blessings every day compared to where I was a year ago. A year ago, I was sleeping behind my dad's sofa, not even on a mattress, just on some blankets and a couple of pillows.
I mean, just a year ago.
With my own house. A year ago, yeah, man.
Wow. So where were you a year ago? You weren't in Nashville, obviously.
No, I was. Last year, I would have been... I think I was writing. I spent like 2 months in LA.
Okay.
But before I even got offered the deal, I was on a construction site, which one of my best mates took a picture of a spa day who happens to be girlfriend, and it was the place that I helped build. Like, I fitted the windows, floors, stuff. He's like, oh my God, I'm like, nuts. But yeah.
Oh, what a trip.
Like, you're having a day of rest where that was my day of hell every day for like 8 months.
Wow.
I was getting up at the crack of dawn, man. Before the birdies were even tweeting, I was up in that construction site. Like, with like men's men. And then there's me that's like a, I don't know, I'm not very manly. So.
I'm not going to catch you whittling a piece of wood anytime soon. So,
no. I still like. I like that. I learned a lot. You know, when it comes to me, when I have my own house, I'll take some of what I learned
Yeah, that's when it becomes useful. Yeah, that shit would be useful for me now. But when you're doing it, like as a job, and you know you, which I assume, like you feel like you shouldn't be there, but you're stuck there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just like waking up and it's freezing cold at like 5 a.m. And then by 6 or 7, you're on the site. It's grueling. And then you get like one 15-minute break, and then you get a 30-minute break and another 15. So it's not even enough for you to decompress. Because you're doing like a lot of heavy lifting, and my hands were ruined by the time I left that site.
I mean, this is mind-boggling to me a little bit, because I know about a few record deals in your life and publishing deals.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, I know there was a deal with Atlantic. I know there's a publishing deal with Universal. And mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a few scattered somewhere in there, too. But then just even a year ago, like, you were homeless working construction. So you're going to have to tell me what all – to that point, how did you even get there?
So I signed my publishing deal for Primary Wave, and a lady there called Janice Frock, well, she's been there for me for years. She's an incredible publisher. But she said to me, you know, you've got one more writing trip left in your publishing deal, and then you're going to have to get a job because you haven't recouped. And I was like, fuck, all right, cool. She helped me get the job on the construction site. She let me live at her house for 2 weeks while I was, you know, there doing the construction, because like, she knew I was sleeping behind my dad's sofa.
I mean, how big was your publishing deal then, if like you had to recoup it?
Well, I signed as a duo with my friend, but the month we signed, we wanted different things. And we were working together, we were writing with Youngblood. We ended up getting his single Loner that we did together. And I don't know, writing songs every day can be really, 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 like, draining. Yeah, and I started to be in the room with artists and not feeling, like, appreciated, you know, like, with what I can bring to the table. Not like I was, not people were ignoring me or anything, but I just wasn't, it wasn't enough.
Mm, do you feel like it was like a identity thing? Like they just kind of looked at you as like, well, you're a songwriter and then I'm the artist. Like there's a division between you guys, or was it something else?
I didn't really get that. Any of the people I worked with, I was really lucky. I think it was more of, I like being on stage, man.
Mm, okay.
I love being on stage, and I love, there's no better high to me in the world than being on stage. Watching people sing your lyrics back to you that you created. I want that. So I made the... But I moved out. I came up to Nashville and did a writing trip, and I met a guy called Dallas Dawson. And we wrote a song called Highs and the Lows, which is about, you know, like family and not caring about the materialistic things in the world, and like a story of prevail. And I wrote it, and Visor House, the record company I'm signed to now, they called me and they're like, hey, can we want to meet you about this song you've written. So I go into Visor House and they're like, do you think you could be an artist? And I was like, nah, I'm not doing it. At that time, so this is like about a year and a half ago, I was like, nah, I don't want to do it.
Because at this point, you had like, I would guess about 3 record deals, a couple publishing deals. You're already like trying to recoup. So it's just like you're burned mm-hmm. out. You wanted to walk away.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I wanted to give the song to a big artist and not go home and work on the construction site. Because when I was in the office and they were talking to me, I knew in a few days I was flying home to go back on that construction site. So the desperation of me being like, oh, just take the song, and, you know, we'll get it cut and I'll just take the money. Because I didn't believe in myself as an artist back then as well. And they were like, all right, cool. So I flew home and I was back on the construction site. And then Matt Swanson and Jennifer and Brandon and Meg and the whole team kind of said, look, we want to fly you up to California to meet Matt, the guy who, you know, owns Wiser House, and just go out and speak to him and see how you feel. Went out, spoke to him, and they offered me the deal that I was scared, because before when I had record deals, it has to be about the team. If you haven't got people that don't believe in you, that are working with you, then it's hard to be motivated and not be so self-deprecated.
Yeah, so, that's a tough minefield for me personally. Because it's kind of a security blanket, the self-deprecation. Because I mean, I feel like it is. I kind of feel like it's a shield from things that are good, but then also things that are bad, you know, out there in the world.
Yeah. I completely agree, man. And I suffered from depression, and I got PTSD, and I don't know, I was just in a really vulnerable place. But Jennifer and Matt and Brandon and Megan, Lexi and Christian, everyone, they just made me believe that I'm meant to be an artist. And I still, you know, I'll have a few days last week where I was like, shit, man, I'm not good enough to do this. Why am I still pushing? And then I'll call Brandon. I called Brandon at like 9 in the morning the other day, and I never get up that early. I was like, am I doing the right thing? Is my music good enough? He's like, dude, you're overthinking it. You got to trust us. Like, it's going to happen. And it's going to be slow moving at first, obviously, but because I'm coming out of nowhere. I'm not an influencer. I haven't got loads of followers on Instagram. I'm not, you know, I did The Voice, but that was 7 years ago, years ago.
Right. Yeah, I mean,
forgotten about that.
Yeah, and like, I want to get to that. I want to remember that, at least in my head, because the crazy thing about what you said is that, especially trust, because I feel like the deals that you've gone through, and dude, I mean, you've had like some crazy big deals. And
yeah, my Atlantic deal was, I had 400 grand in my account when I was 23.
Yeah, and they just don't hand those out anymore. Like, I mean,
No, they don't.
That was like 10 years ago, at least in my headspace. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that was for you. Was it about 10 years?
It's exactly 10 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Okay. Yeah, I mean, that's about right.
Gone to Atlantic, yeah.
Wow.
People would have given up by now, but I just can't. I can't.
Well, I don't know if you feel this way, because I have a homeless story too, but I feel like, at least in my headspace, and I can relate to you in this way, is that trust is a hard thing, because you're so used to like just doing things on your own. And then just when things hit the fan, or just things go to shit, it's just kind of like, mm-hmm. it's just kind of easier just to kind of sit in it a little bit. But then when somebody says, I got you, it's just kind of like, well, do you really got me? You know, I feel like there's a lesson here of like identity, and then also trust as well.
Yeah. Trust is a big thing for me. I haven't got a manager right now because of trust.
That's crazy.
Not to say that my old manager did anything wrong. He didn't. You know, we broke up amicably. Mm. It's just, I have such a good team right now that if I put one bad egg in it, it's going to spoil it all. Mm. Everyone's communicating well. Everyone's getting on. Everyone's motivated. I treat everyone like they're friends. They are friends, because this is a team effort. This isn't I. This isn't me. This isn't about me. It takes a whole team of people. It's like an airplane, man. You need the whole mechanism to get that thing off the ground. It can't just be you.
Yeah, right. All right, so I know there was a record deal like early in your youth, and then somewhere like 2012, 2013, you did The Voice UK. And man, I have to say, like on a quick Google search, just to kind of figure out who you are, that was like one of the first things that popped up. And it was just like, oh, well, no shit, this guy's on The Voice. It's really amazing. He deserves to do it. But you would think after The Voice, like, this guy's set. It's all done. Like, he's going to have the record deals. He's going to have the cars. He's going to have the house. He's going to do the thing. I mean, we already kind of know part of the story, but at the same time, is that where your headspace was too?
No. I did The Voice out of desperation, man.
What does that mean?
I left Atlantic. I ended up working at a bar. And I wanted to get a new publishing deal, but I couldn't because I was tied into Universal, like, because I signed a massive deal. I was signed in for a while. Mm. And someone, like a scout, called me. He's like, hey, we want to try you out for The Voice. And I was like, okay, cool. But, you know, I'm already signed in publishing. So if you do The Voice, we can get rid of that publishing deal. Because the Voice, when you win, it goes to Universal anyway. And then I agreed and I signed a contract with them. And then it turned out that the A&Rs of the winner, I'd already had a record deal with. It was Joe Charrington and Nick Raphael, who do like Sam Smith and Bonds. And they were doing Sam Smith at the time. So for me, I was like, shit, I can't win this. If I win it, they're not going to put anything into me. I already know, like, Joe is an amazing A&R. She's a really nice woman as well. And I went in and saw her like months before it or something. I had some songs and I was like, do you reckon I could be an artist? And she was like, nah, for the writing. So I was like, shit. So it was a big clusterfuck, man. That show, I was really depressed. I was hella overweight because I was taking loads of these like anti-anxiety pills, and they were like making me put loads of weight on. I was drinking all the time. I just wasn't ready for it. It was fucking terrible. And as soon as the show's finished, I went back to London. Went back to my place in London. I was there probably about 4 or 5 days, and I had to get out of London. I disappeared to Reading and hid for like a year. Being on the tube and all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Well, tell me about the depression then, because where does that fit in your life then? Because you even just said, like, you weren't ready for The Voice. And
depression controlled me. It controlled me. I remember my dad picked me, we were in the car on the way to The Voice, and I kept having panic attacks. I couldn't sleep. And I was in the car, and every time I tried to close my eyes to sleep, my body felt like it was falling. And I was like, shit, Dad, I can't do this, man. And this is after I'd already got through. That was like the second round where you go and meet the rest of the contestants and YouTube and stuff.
Right, like you did the whole thing, and there was already a seal of approval. Like you were already in it. You were going to do it. Mm-hmm. But something in your head just kept screaming at you.
Yeah. And my performances just consecutively got worse and worse and worse.
Do you feel like just psychologically, like, and just even mental health-wise, it just...
Mental health, because after I did The Voice, I moved to Reading. I ended up meeting my girlfriend at the time, and I went into therapy for like a whole year. I didn't do any music. I fucking lost a ton of weight. I was like a skeleton. I couldn't eat. I didn't leave the house. I had to do a thing called cognitive therapy where you relive something that, fucked your head up for. So I did. I had a therapist last year. I saw her 3 times a week. I had a doctor who supported me. He was on call. I was in a really, 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 really fucking dark place. Like, I didn't want to be here. And I tried it a few times. I tried to leave a few times, but God weren't letting me go, man. So
Good. Good, man. Well, I mean...
Good therapy, yeah.
Yeah, especially, man, fucking therapy. It's a beautiful thing. I'm glad you did
it. Fuck it is, man.
That's amazing. It's not easy.
No, God. Honestly, that's the hardest year of my life. Like, it was 50 times worse than 2020. I mean, I didn't see Get Out. I didn't know what the fuck I was going to do. I'd done The Voice. I did a terrible job on it. The whole country saw it. I was like, I'm fucking done for.
Yeah, I can see where messes with your head, especially like in this game of entertainment. And then you have these voices in your head. And like at the time, you can't pinpoint what it is because you didn't work it out. Like you don't know what it is.
No.
Like you just feel like
it just made me self-sabotage, man. That's all it does. It's like that little voice in your head. And I still get the little bastard voice in my head now and again. It's like, you're not good enough to do this. And I think part of that drives me as well. Like, I could have changed my name and I could have got rid of all The Voice you know, I could have stepped away from it. But the reason I haven't changed my name, because I want people to see how fucking persistent I am and how it doesn't matter how old you are or what you've done or what's on YouTube and stuff. If you really fucking want it and you're good enough, keep going. There's no reason to throw the towel in.
Yeah, that's good, man. I think that even applies to life, too. I mean, not just like vocation life, but just like your human life. Because, I mean,
yeah,
there's nothing worse than like feeling like you're alone, like with your thoughts. And I know, yeah, I've been there myself, of that you go through this conversation in your head and you feel like you're the only one going through it. And then you just kind of want to end it.
Yeah, that's exactly how it felt.
No.
Every day.
And it makes it worse.
Stuck in that flat.
Yeah, it makes it.
Flat. I couldn't go out.
Oh, that's so bad.
I had an anger problem. When I was doing PTSD, the cognitive therapy, it gave me an incredibly bad temper. Like, if I was driving down the street, I remember one time this dude, I was with my ex-girlfriend, we were in the car, and we were picking up my fishing gear, because I was going to go away for the weekend and just fish. And this van comes speeding around the corner, and it just missed me. And I went, fucking hell, man. And the dude went, oh, fuck off. And how he said it, I jumped out of the car and I chased him and grabbed him out of the car. Wow. And my girlfriend was going, your future. That dude getting stuff as well, man. I fucking sprinted after that man.
It's so dark, but it's now, funny.
I look back at it now, I'm like, oh my God, if someone did that to me now, I'd stop. I can grow up. But because I was in such a bad headspace, man.
Yeah, and you don't recognize that person either.
No. I look back and I'm like, why did I self-sabotage? Like, why did I have so much to give but spend more time in my head thinking I'm not good enough than actually doing it? And if I just knuckled down and did it, I couldn't. I needed to do therapy.
That's good, man. I mean, the self-sabotage thing, I mean, that leaves a lot to the imagination. Like, were you, I mean, was it like really, did you try to self-medicate as much as possible?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Drugs and alcohol, yeah. To be honest, I only ever did one coke. I've never done pills or any crazy shit like that, like codeine or OxyContin. I've never, and I never will, thank God.
Well, my point is, like, I guess, like, especially when you're in this headspace, like, you feel like you want, it can go either two ways, I feel like. Like, you want some uppers and you want to feel that high, or you want some downers and you want to shoot that needle. And so it's like a weird dichotomy feeling, I guess, depending on what day it is and, like, where do you want to go? Like, do you want to feel comfortable in that depression blanket, or do you want to try and forget about it?
For me, alcohol was like, cocaine, I didn't abuse a lot. Like, I never did it every day. I never did it sober. It wasn't one of them things. I didn't need cocaine. Alcohol was my muse, was my body armor. That's the only way I could describe it. You know, like, if I wanted to go out to socialize with friends in London, I couldn't do it sober.
Right.
I couldn't. I was so insecure and so wrapped up in my own head that I drink before I used to go out, and I drink things like liquor and stuff, and I don't drink liquor anymore. I can't. I've got celiac disease, which probably from all this shit I did before.
Yeah. So are you in sobriety now, or just kind of cut it out?
No. After therapy, I cut everything out. When I did therapy, I didn't touch a beer for over a year. And I've got happier. I've allowed myself I drink like Trulies, things like that, and, you know, a little, and some tequila. But I mean, dude, I was doing like a liter of vodka a day.
Wow. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's
now I couldn't even do a fucking glass. Like,
right. It makes you sick. It makes you sick to your stomach just even thinking about it. I understand that.
Yeah. Just thinking about it, that hangover the next day, and then having to drink again because of the hangover, just that vicious cycle.
Right.
Like, have you experienced anything like that?
Right. Oh my gosh. Yes, absolutely. To this day, I have trouble, which I know it's a little funny, or at least in my headspace, it's funny, like whiskey, because whiskey was just an easy go-to in the time I was touring in country music. Like, it was just everywhere. It was just it. Like, I don't have a problem with beer, but just whiskey was everywhere. And, you know, you just borderline binge on whiskey. And now that I'm really thinking about it and going through the cycle where I was in my head, I'm thinking about it now. It's making me a little bit nauseous just because of that emotional tie to it. I'm not that same person. But then secondly, it was a different headspace for me. I'm just not that same mental head capacity where I was then.
Yeah. Is it not ruining your voice drinking whiskey all the time?
I mean, I'm just a player and a songwriter. So I never was like the artist by any means.
Were playing guitar, did it not give you the shakes?
I mean, no. Now you kind of feel like, to me, and I know this is going to sound funny, to me, I felt like it made me play better. And it became a corner post a little bit, because whatever anxiety I would have, this self-deprecating thing before I go on stage, like whiskey became the medicine of like, just to shove it down and not think about it.
Yeah. And I know that feeling.
And then it became a pattern.
I was drunk on stage. Mm-hmm. I was drunk in the voice. Through the voice.
Wow.
And performances, man.
Well,
I remember that first performance. My mate Dean stayed with me. My mate Dean and Ashton came with me because it was in Manchester. Fuck me, man. They were like, bro, you can't drink the night before. I was like, oh, I'm only going to have a few. I've had about fucking 5 or 6 pints, or even hit the bedroom. And then waking up the next day, man, shit, crazy.
Yeah, it is. Crazy. And it's a weird, I mean, you even got me thinking where I was even in my headspace. But I mean, at the time, it's such like, this is it. Like, this is the medicine that's going to at least get me by at this point.
Yeah. And I'm glad that we're talking about it, because I know some people will hear this and hear us talking about like substance abuse and depression and stuff. But, fuck, dude, we walk into a room, fucking 3 of the 5 people in that room have got depression issues or substance abuse or anxiety. And I think now that people are talking about mental health and depression and PTSD, I think it's good that we're taking it out of the dark, because there is so much stigma attached to it, and there shouldn't be, because we're all fucking human. It's all in our bodies, all in our DNA from when we're born. Everyone has it. Some people get depression hereditary, like from their parents, and some people get it from a fucked up situation that they can't shake.
Yeah, and I don't see how, and I truly don't think this person exists. Like, they don't have any mental health issues within entertainment whatsoever. There's not been a single person that I've met through this that at least deals with at least some kind of anxiety and like go through the cycles of not really recovery, but at least self-healing or self-medicating itself. And it becomes this overwhelming thing where it controls their life. And I don't think I've ever got to that point. And I hate to say lucky, because I don't feel like I'm lucky. I just chose not to do it.
You feel like you dodged the bullet.
I think so. Maybe that's the right way to say it. And some people aren't so lucky. And like you said, there's a hereditary issue about it too. Some people are just predispositioned just to be alcoholics. And it happens.
Yeah. And there was a kid when I was younger who lived in my area. And he's dead now, bless him. He was a year younger than me. But when we were like 15, this guy would have a liter of vodka every day. Wouldn't go home. He would sleep on the grass in the fields just around the area. Like, he had a home to go to. But he was just an alcoholic. And I mean, 15, probably younger, man. If I think back to it, like, probably 14, 15. He was fucking, but yeah, he died from it. He drank himself into a grave, bless him. His mom saw my mom recently at Tesco, which is off the Kroger, and she said, yeah, he died. That was pure alcoholism. That was in his genes or in his DNA or something, like something, like he was just, he drinks all.
Yeah, it's tough when it gets to that point. Do you feel like you were at that point?
No. Not with alcohol and drugs, no. I never got to that.
You dodged the bullet then?
Yeah, I dodged the bullet. I did enough for it to scare me, but I think I needed to get better so bad in therapy that I dodged that. I didn't end up in hospital or on a drip or anything, you know what I mean? I didn't have to go to rehab. I've never done anything like that. So, I think I was just really lucky. I think I found, you know, I had a few therapists, but this one therapist that I got and the doctor and myself and Vicky, all them three together, like, and obviously my family, the support for my family is insane. I've got an amazing family. So I think, and my mum and all, when I was younger, she said, why are you drinking all the time? Like, you're ruining your good looks. And you used to be so good looking when you were a kid, but alcohol and all that fucking really makes you look awful. Like, especially when you're pounding a lot of it, it ages your face like fuck.
You obviously, you dealt with with mental health, with depression, mm-hmm. and then you self-medicate yep. it with alcohol. And you always wrote songs, though. But now you're on this other side of therapy. And it feels like, and I didn't know you before, but it feels like you are on a healthy side. Like, things seem to be really good for you.
Yeah.
Do you tell a difference, like, in your craft itself?
I do, yeah, definitely. When I was drinking a lot, like, even through Youngblood and the work in Youngblood, I was still doing therapy. You know, there was like a few times that people pulled out cocaine in front of me when I was going through therapy, and I just went home. I just got in the car and went home. It's where we worked, at the studios we worked at. Like, obviously, there's a lot of people that still party. But I've just got this mad amount of strength in me right now, and I've got so much to prove, and I'm so lucky to be given another record deal at 33 years of age, and I'd be a fucking idiot to ruin this. And I'm not going to take, you know, I'm not taking anything for advantage. I wake up every day and I thank fucking God, and I'd pinch myself and be like, wow, I'm here. And I'm not, my biggest fear in the world, you know, I think this has probably helped me fucking put down the drink and stuff, is I'd hate to leave this world and not be remembered. If my music doesn't go out and it doesn't leave a small print, then it was all for nothing. So I'm fighting against that thought to get this music out.
That's a good feeling, man. It's the thing of, I feel like you have perspective, especially going through shit. Yeah. I mean, just to begin with. And then also, you can be grateful about it. You can look at this and say that yeah. you're gonna do this a little bit different.
Yeah, exactly. And then even now talking to you, bro, I can't believe I'm here. I literally can't fucking believe I made it out to America. But I don't know. I'm very happy. I'm never going to give up. I want this artist thing more now than when I was a kid.
Yeah. So why do you think that you feel like you're ready now versus before?
Because I beat the demons in my head. There's no demons there to pull me down and be telling me that I'm not good enough. And they're still popping every now and again, but you know, I've got the tools to deal with them.
Yeah, tell me about those tools then. Like, what is the thing for you that works for you?
Well, anxiety. I used to do a thing where I couldn't go into a room if I didn't really know anyone because my anxiety would be so bad. I'd be like, I couldn't explain to people. I felt like I was going to have a panic attack. Now I just go in the room and I just be like, yeah, I'll just let everyone know that my anxiety is really bad. I'm having a bad day with it just so you don't think I'm being rude or, you know, being strange. And 9 times out of 10, they go, oh my God, so I have anxiety too. Sorted. When it comes to things like, if I feel like I need to self-sabotage, I'll call my therapist. Or if I do self-sabotage, if I do drink and get really drunk for no reason, you know, obviously I'll go out and I'll have drinks with my friends and, you know, at shows I'll have a couple of drinks and stuff like that. But I just don't anymore. I know that I can call Safia and be like, I've got this stupid shit going through my head right now. She'd be like I called her like a month ago when I was having these weird nightmares. I was feeling down and depressed and, you know, shit again. And I called her. And it's like getting service with a car. It's like going in and getting gas and oil put in, getting a checkup, and then like a service. It's like it literally settled all my nerves.
You have support. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, support, yeah. Yeah, you're right. It is support.
Because I feel like, that's a big thing for me. I personally feel really attached to. It's like I just hate that feeling of aloneness, and I hate for anybody to be alone in their own headspace. And so it's just super important, man, just to find either your crew, somebody that's healthy, somebody that actually loves you, takes care of you. Man, yeah. It takes you places.
It does. Killing people with kindness and not being... I used to be quite negative as well. My depression used to bring up a big dark cloud in the room with me. I think therapy, man. Therapy, if anyone who listens to this is suffering from any kind of symptoms, go and talk to a therapist. Talk it out, trust me, because it's in your head. You feel so much better when you speak out and you realize that you're not alone.
I mean, things do look healthy for you. I do have to say. I mean, I know it's a music video, but watching Tunnel Vision, it's the thing of, yeah, this looks like a different dude. From 2013.
Yeah, it's crazy, right?
Right, yeah. It is.
I have pictures of me from just after The Voice when I was like, I did a few shows to make some money quick, and I was fucked on them shows. Like drinking on stage, like pints of Guinness and stuff. It's just like, no wonder I didn't get a big fan base. People are probably like, what the fuck is he doing? I could see all my friends around me and all like, bro, you need to calm down at the party.
But, I mean, at the same time, when you have nothing and then everybody gives you the world, or somebody gives you the world, man, it really is your oyster. I mean, you do go like full out, man. You go 100%. I know that feeling.
I'm very lucky, man. I've had a crazy journey, and I wouldn't want to live through it again, but I'm glad I'm here now. You know? I feel like I went through all that, and I'm now... All that shit that I went through, I'm about to put it into an album. And it's going to come out, and it's going to make sense for everything that I've gone through.
When are you expecting like to release it?
We've got Wait a Minute comes out next, and that's in about 6 weeks. And then I've got another song called Explicit coming out 6 weeks after that, or 2 months after that. And then, I don't know, we're doing it single by single right now, but... I've got an album there ready to, you know, to put together and mix, but I want to keep writing as we're doing singles, because I'm just writing better stuff. I just keep outwriting myself. So yeah, and then I'm excited to get Highs and the Lows out. That's my baby, and that comes out in March next year. But the video's going to be really fucking cool for that, and the song's got a great message, and... It's just me and Dallas that wrote it. And it's just like Dallas Wilson is my... He's an amazing person.
Yeah,
he's
the best out of me. I don't know Dallas. I know a few of his songs he's written, but I like him as a writer.
Oh, yeah, he's a fucking fantastic writer, man. He's just a really, really nice dude. And he's got great morals. And yeah, he's an awesome dude, man. He's so lucky to work with him all the time.
That's cool.
I was on his house last night, and we were like, shit, man. We were sitting down and we were doing melodies, and he just jumped up off his chair and he's like, dude, I get to make music with you, my best friend, all the time. How lucky you'll be. Like, bro, you're so funny.
Calm down, bro.
Yeah.
We're in a pandemic. Calm down.
Give me a cuddle. Yeah. Like, do you want to get in the hot tub? No.
No. I love that. That's
in that fucking hot tub. He has it too hot. It makes me feel sick.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, it's pandemic. I don't want to be in a hot tub. Not with Dallas. I'm good.
Yeah, it's a very American thing.
Oh, yeah.
All geezers getting their hot tub together. Like, it is. If you did that in the UK, it'd be like, why are you not in a hot tub together drinking beers? It's a bit weird.
Yeah, yeah. You want to go for his fits? No, I'm good. I'm good.
Yeah.
I like my clothes on.
I ain't getting in there, bruv. If there's no girls, I ain't getting in no fucking hot tub.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. Well, I mean, especially with the music coming out, I know you're gearing up for an album. And, like, this is your record, man.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, you know, it's that whole the whole thing of, like, you have your whole life, like, to write your first record, and here you are. Like, you're doing it right now.
Yeah. What I never did before is I used to, like, pick songs and be like, this is a good one, this is a good one. Now, you know, the team live with the songs, and I'll go on their feedback. It's like, well, we're getting the most enjoyment out of these three, out of them seven that you've given us. And then I'll take into account what they're saying. Because sometimes I can be a self-indulgent writer and only write what I want to hear. But, you know, as a songwriter, we've got to remember that not everyone wants to hear what you're going through. Not everyone gives a fuck. You know, people want things that they can relate to. So when I write a song nowadays, I think of a woman in a car taking her kids to school. The mom is going to listen to the lyrics. The kids are going to listen to the melodies. And the melodies are like a little ball bouncing over the words, like, you know, like nursery rhyme kind of thing. I try to cater to everyone's ear instead of just mine. If I had it my way, I'd make an album like Damien Rice, so like a real stripped back acoustic feel singer songwriter album. But it's been done so many times and everyone's doing it. You know, I could have done the singer songwriter route, but I'd be up against people like Lewis Capaldi and Sam Smith and stuff like that, and that's a hard old lane to be in, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you could do that later down the road, you know, get some more perspective, get some age, mm-hmm. some gray in the hair. You could do that. But right now, like your sound just seems so perfect for you because like your voice is out of this world. I mean, you don't need me to tell you that. But
thank you, bro.
I think it just fits like with what you're doing. Like when I listen to Wait a Minute, I mean, it just seemed like everything just started like making sense because I've been keeping up like Beautiful Creature, Tunnel Vision. So like everything so far is just kind of like, oh, this is all like fitting into the pieces of the sound, the vocal ability. Mm-hmm. You got a range, man. I mean, it's good.
Thank you, man. I want the album to feel like that. All the songs feel a little bit different, but yet they still fit on the same record. And the album's got a bit of everything. It's got some good dance songs in there. We've got some amazing ballads. It's good, man. I'm writing the record thinking of the live show as well. But Beautiful Creature sounds better live than it does the record.
I don't know, man. I don't want to cut you too short, especially as a lyricist, too. I mean, I don't know who wrote like what line each day, but you know, there's always the second verse curse. I don't know if you ever heard that, but when I was listening to Wait a Minute, I mean, dude, you had me hooked on the second verse, like done. Like, what's that line? I'm awful with lines. How can we go from heaven to rock bottom? Is that it? Or how can we?
Yeah, how did we go from heaven to rock bottom? If there's something on your mind, seek it. Yeah. I remember writing that.
So good, man. Did you write that with Dallas?
Yeah, it was me, Dallas, and Scott Spock.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I got Scott Spock out of retirement to do that song.
What's he doing these days?
I'm not sure. He owns, Vin Diesel's car in Fast and Furious.
Right. The D's loaded. He's doing pretty good.
dude, he's done Rihanna, Katy Perry, Avril Lavigne. He did a Korn album, Jason Mraz, Britney Spears. Yo, he's got flat. A day.
Yeah.
But he was Matt's friend. They were doing a car show together. And Matt showed us a video. And I thought, of this car show that he's working on. I was like, oh my God, I know him. That's Scott Fox. I worked with him, you know, when I signed for Atlantic in LA years ago. And he was like, oh, cool. Let me text him. And he said, do you know Carl Michael? And Scott messaged back saying, one of the best vocalists I've ever worked with. And then Matt was like, oh, cool, would you want to write with him? And stuff? I'm not doing it anymore. And then we convinced him, and we got Wait a Minute out of it, which was great.
Oh, legit. That's so good.
He produced it. And he was like, he's not on social media or anything like that. He's not one of them kind of people.
Right, right, right. Yeah, but he doesn't need it. Fuck it. He's got millions.
No, he doesn't. he's very, very well off. But he's just a real lovely, like, positive, relaxing kind of person to be around. And we go to this sushi spot in LA called Katsuya. Amazing, man. I do like, I look forward to writing, especially the sushi afterwards. It's like a little treat. Like 10 years ago, my treat would be another bottle.
That'd be good, man. I love that. I just love how, I don't know, things just seem to be working out for you. And I hear it in your voice. I feel like there's a hint of sadness a little bit in some areas, but at the same time, I feel like it's gratitude. You're just in a good place.
Yeah, it's a few things that I regret, but I was a kid and I got handed a lot of money, and it's just a shame that a lot of people saw my demise, but now they're going to see me rise. Hey, lyric.
I love it.
I always get my voice notes out. Yeah, man. But I want people just to see the persistence in me, and I want to be an example for some people that, you know, you can fight through depression and adversity, and even when everything is against you, you know, if you stick to it and work hard and people fucking well, you'll prevail.
Yeah, yeah. AKA, don't be an asshole. You be all
right. Don't be an asshole. That's one thing that a lot of artists need to learn. It's not about you. It's about the fucking team. There's no I in peace. When you say people, like even with the bands in my band, they don't play for me. They play with me. They're my friends. We're sharing space together. Same thing with the team at Rise of Health and at Primary Wave. All team effort. Them songs wouldn't even make it onto YouTube or anything if someone else didn't help me do it. Not all me doing it, it's the team. And I've got the fucking best one right now. And I'm not going to ruin it. I'm not going to mess it up.
I authentically believe that, Carl. Nothing but hopes, dreams, good vibes, good intentions, everything heading your way. Hope you get everything that you need and that you want in the near future, my friend. Nice to meet you at Carl Michael, or It's Carl Michael on social platforms, folks. Now it's your turn. Be sure to go to listen to his music. Wait a minute. It's the freshest release. There's more music coming. Best way to stay in tune, especially what is coming out, go give him a follow at It's Carl Michael or at Carl Michael. And as for us, you're on that social train. You're in that search bar at Unofficial Brandon on Instagram, TikTok, at SMI Podcast, Facebook, Twitter. All right. And then also SMIPodcast.com. You can check out all the other stuff there with Carl as well. We'll have music videos and some, if you want to purchase music, go to Spotify, whatever, we'll have those links up there too. If you enjoyed this episode, we got into it, folks. There's a lot of stuff that we went into. I feel like we know somebody that popped in our old memory head space that we want to share something with, something that they can relate to. Go ahead and share this episode. That's all I ever want. I don't want anybody to be alone in their headspace. Carl helped us out with that. Go listen, go share it. I appreciate it. And Carl will appreciate it as well. Be sure to subscribe. We got episodes coming out all the way up to like mid-December. We got Sarah Buxton. We got Ray Benson. We got my good bud Armin J. Some fresh stuff is coming out. Go subscribe on your podcast app. If you know how to use that. I'm not sure anymore. All right. Happy surviving.